Discover insights to boost your business or improve your quality of life right here on the Soar to Success podcast with your host, Pat Altvader.
My guest today is Bob Culhan, founder and CEO of Business Improv. He's the author of Getting to Yes and offers programs that link improv to business in a variety of formats, from live to virtual to digital. I can't wait to learn from him. Welcome to the podcast, Bob.
Thanks, Pat. I'm excited to be here with you.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. So I'd like to start by you talking a little bit about your early career in improv and how you made this shift from comedy to business.
Yes. So in order to really talk about that shift, before I got into improvisation, I graduated with an undergrad degree in business, which I think I mentioned to you is, appropriately enough, a BS in business. So I got that degree, and then I was actually really good at marketing and won a Bank of America award for small business creative marketing before the age of 24.
Wow.
And then I was being propositioned by some big advertising and publicity agencies in Chicago, and I left business completely instead of following what should have been a good, clear career path and financial stability. Yeah. I immersed myself in improvisation in 1994 and haven't looked back.
Well, that's wait, I want to stop you right there and just find out why you did that. Like, what happened? Were you always interested in improv as you were growing up, or what?
In high school, instead of having a real talent on the talent shows, I used to ask if I could just take the blank stage. So what would happen is, like, the jazz band would come out and play, and then the curtain would fall, and then there'd be several minutes of just blank stage. We just stare at the screen until, like, the pom-pom routine comes out and the curtain opens again. I was like, can I have that area right there? And me and a couple other friends would get out there and just essentially do whatever it took to make people laugh. I didn't know at the time, I graduated in 1990 from high school. I didn't know that was called improv. I learned that in college, and then I was like, I'm going to Chicago. That's where you go to learn this stuff. So yes, I knew that this was skin to me, learning improvisation. And from 94 to 99, I did everything in my power not to get back into business in any capacity. I was a nanny. I hauled sheetrock. I painted houses. I did whatever. And of course, coached improv, taught improv, whatever would get me some type of capital. Mm-hmm. And at this time in 1999, the only thing I did that was as an investment when I was a young businessman was buy a condo directly east of Wrigley Field.
Oh,
and so
okay.
99, I'm teaching some corporate improv for some of those big houses in Chicago. And what I keep hearing is this was fun. You can't use any of it. And that made me feel horrible because I love improv and I love business. So I'm like, this is made me feel like a snake oil salesman. So at this time, I'm broke. I'm about to, you know, jeopardy losing my Chicago investment, my condo. I don't know what I'm going to do with, you know, how am I going to make money? Do I get back into business? I'm grappling with all, and then I'm doing something that I don't really believe in anymore because people keep telling me it's not useful.
Yeah.
And at this time, I get the opportunity, just serendipitously, to create the first improv program in any business school anywhere in the entire world that focused solely on linking improvisation to business. And that was at the Duke University Fuqua School of Business.
And how did they hear about you?
They didn't hear about me. This was just right place, right time. There was a professor who was at Fuqua who was on sabbatical from Fuqua and teaching at Columbia Business School before it was Booth School of Business. He asked a couple other improvisers if they wanted to collaborate to create an up-on-your-feet experiential program, because Duke sent out an email saying, we're looking for some experiential learning for second mid-year orientation, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a couple of people were like, no, I don't want to do that with you, he just kind of asked me, and I was like, yes, I do, because I know business, and I love improv, so let's put the two of these together. And so what I started doing was partnering with professors, behavioral psychologists, cognitive psychologists, social psychologists, behavioral economists, you know, people who study how and why we make decisions. And then I would create high energy, up on your feet experiential learning programs and start pinning them down with the behavioral sciences. And that allowed me to reach real, real tough business outcomes, you know, really hard to find, hard to reach and hard to define returns on investment. Like, this is what we need from you, Business Improv. We go and get it. We go and get it.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds really interesting. So what's the rest of the story then? That was 1999.
Yes.
So that's 20 years ago.
Yeah, this was our 21st year running the 5-day intensive at the Duke University Fuqua School of Business. Wow. They made me an adjunct professor. I'm an adjunct professor at Columbia Business School as well. Got associations with UCLA Anderson and Wharton and a lot of great business schools. 13 of the top 26 business schools we've either are still in or have touched in some capacity. Yeah. And then over the last 20 years, just continue to not only develop those relationships, work with great businesses, whether it's pharma or advertising. It could be, I work with 30 of the top people in the United States Department of Defense. Wow. So it's government, it's military, because what I teach is communication and collaboration based. It's focus, it's concentration, it's presence. The way that we define improv in business improv are on three core competencies, which is reacting, adapting, and communicating. When you're focusing on reacting and adapting and communicating, it's not what group needs it. It's who doesn't need to put at this, especially in this environment, right?
Yeah. And so from those three core principles, is that where you get the title of your book? Yes And, or is that an improv tenet?
So the book Getting to Yes And, you hit it right on the head. Yes And is the cornerstone of improvisation all around the world. It's not a phrase that I made up. There's a little bit of a debate, really, who penned it first. However, you can go back to Viola Spolin in the 1930s and 1940s in Chicago, and she created this wonderful book, Improvisation Games for the Theater, which was all about integrating children into groups and societies, children specifically who were a little bit potentially on the spectrum, I think the language would be now, or international students who were immigrants, families of immigrants, and didn't speak English as the first language. So she created all these great theater games to just for social interaction and connection with each other. And that's really where the modern day improvisation was born, in Chicago, as a way to socially integrate children. And that's where Yes And come from.
Yes. So tell us about your book. What can we learn from your book? And how long has it been out? Yes.
This thing?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It's just a casual read for me. This book, Getting to Yes And, The Art of Business Improv, is a Stanford University Press book. And the reason why I say that is because you can't write a fluff piece for Stanford,
right.
Or any really university press,
yeah.
Or you go through a couple of academic panels for this guy.
Yeah.
So it's cool. I say that because it's baked in citations. It's based in research. It came out in 2017, and to the very best of my ability, Getting to Yes And is prescriptive. This unpacks the how. This is how you use business improv techniques for communication and collaboration, for personal development, professional development, leadership, creating culture. And so in the book itself, it not only has exercises, this is what you should do with your team, which is 100% applicable in a virtual community.
Yes.
This also has challenges on a personal level, and it shows you where to look for pushback. So it's all about the resistance when somebody's like, I'm not going to do that. Okay. I know how to do this. This book will tell me. So yeah. Thank you for the plug. Yeah.
And how can people get it?
It really is to the very best of my ability. You can get this pretty much anywhere you can buy books.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Amazon is a great place to go for it. And if you do buy it on Amazon, of course, I would love a little note on it, a little review. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Since we're plugging.
Those are always good.
Yes.
Yes.
1-800 CEO Goodreads, all the types of
yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So somebody like me, I'm an intro. I like to claim, this is probably a label that I'm using as an excuse, but I claim that I'm an introverted thinker. So I am better off, on my own. And I'm the person who always is thinking, like, I think a lot of people say this anyway. Oh, I should have said that after the fact. So can you teach a person that's claiming to be an introverted thinker to be better on their feet?
Absolutely. 100%. We've worked with the top 25 rocket scientists and Richard Branson's spaceship company. And I'll start there because there are not too many people who are more introverted than rocket scientists or scientists as a whole. So I mentioned, you know, we've worked in pharma before, engineers as well, accountants. You know, there's some people who are a little bit more gregarious and some people who are just a little bit more either introverted or just slow to speak, which is not a bad thing at all. You know, we all have our own pace. We all have our own rhythm. This is what makes us authentic. And so these tools and techniques are applicable across the board. They're agnostic because it's all about you bringing out the best of yourself and you bringing out the best of other people as well. Mm-hmm. So whether you're slow to speak and, you know, not quick on the draw, like some people who can talk 1,000 miles an hour, or you're one of those people, it's about getting to the same place with other people. Mm-hmm. And even the most truly introverted people still need to communicate. Yeah. Even in this environment, we still have to reach out. We have to connect with people. And if you're a leader, you have to bring people with you. You can't, if you, no one's following you, you're not leading. Right? Yeah. You're leading yourself.
Yeah. So that's like, not what I meant though.
Come on, me.
Let's go. That's not what I mean. I don't think I'm an introverted person, but I think better on my own than in a group.
Oh, yes.
That's what I meant. I think better on my own. So, so how does the person like that improve their skills through this?
So whether it's this or the digital the book, Getting to Yes And, or the digital program, Improvisational Communication, it's about personal and professional development. So this has to be on your own terms. Mm-hmm. So part of what we do in business improv isn't just teach you improv exercises. Everything is linked, as I mentioned before, in the behavioral sciences and real world outcomes. So if you were going to do this on your own, and I'll go ahead and tell you one of the things that you could learn from this or the digital course. So it's divergent thinking versus convergent thinking.
Okay.
Divergent thinking is you think of the less than sign, you have a problem, a challenge, and you need to explode away from it. So it's about the sheer volume of ideas mm-hmm. versus convergent thinking, which is about judging those ideas. So in the divergent space, and this is where it links to improvisation, and specifically yes and, you postpone judgment. You defer judgment. It doesn't mean you abandon judgment. You just create a space for yourself on a personal level that all you're doing is ideating. All you're doing mm-hmm. is a sheer volume of ideas, or if it's about experimentation, you're breaking it apart. You're putting it, you can do this just by yourself, right? 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour, depending on what the challenge is.
Yeah.
If it's about exploration, you're focusing on just discovery and keeping your mind open to new possibilities and potentials. And then you move it over on the judgment side, which you can still use yes and, to filter through and find the best idea in the tail end. Look at it this way. Individual panning for gold. If you were going to go to the river right now and get gold, would you rather pinch or pan?
Pan.
Right, exactly. So you don't need anybody around you to use these tools and techniques. Mm-hmm. It's just about accessing them on your terms and then employing them.
And so how is this different from brainstorming that, you know, we've used for millions of years in committees?
It's you nailed it perfectly, because that's really where divergent and convergent thinking came from a man named J.P. Guilford, specifically for brainstorming. I believe it was in the 50s or 60s where this came out. And this links very nicely to a collaborative process like brainstorming, because it's a set of rules for brainstorming more than anything else.
Okay.
And it supports it. So the classic argument is people can come up with more creative ideas on their own than with a group. And that's because there's no structure for the group. Once the structure's in place, you know the language, you know the expectations, then the collective consciousness of the team, the group, will outweigh any individual at any time. Mm-hmm. Always. I'm going to say always. That's a bold statement. So always is 99.99999% of the time.
Yeah.
Because it's the power of a team. You know, when everybody's speaking honestly with each other, sharing information, and is open to learning, then you're going to come up with the best answers. And it's a great way to avoid groupthink as well.
Yes. That groupthink, you mean persuading everyone to kind of follow the same route?
Yeah, it's where you give up your own control of thinking and you just, whatever the group is going to do, then that's what I'll do as well. Yeah. Or that Abilene principle, mm-hmm. where you're trying to fit inside the group. It's the opposite of that. When using business improv techniques in a collaborative setting, it's about the celebration of diversity. Mm-hmm. It's about really trying to understand what people are saying on his or her own terms. Mm-hmm. So letting the authentic voice come out of other people. And in doing so, what you create is intrinsic motivation, because it's a basic human desire to be understood, yeah. to be heard.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is just creating a playground for people just to talk, platform, an opportunity for people just to share their voices. And in doing so, the relationships become stronger, and ultimately you'll pan and find the real nuggets of gold out of a lot, as opposed to out of one little pinch.
So tell us about what your company is up to now, besides the work that you do with the universities.
Yes. So with businesses, regardless of size, so this can go from small businesses and even mom and pop shops to medium businesses, mm-hmm. what we're focusing on and have been focusing on, and I'll start really with where our base is. Our base is on-site experiential learning, high mm-hmm. energy, up on your feet. We teach people how to ride a bicycle, and that bicycle is business improv, because if you know how to ride a bike, you're going to know how to use it, get comfortable with it. You know, then you start doing tricks. You teach other people how to use it. You pass this along. And that's what we want you to use these tools and techniques. For the last 10 years, though, we've been focusing on extracting the tenets of what's great in on-site learning and focusing on delivering them through this medium. Mm-hmm. So the writing was on the wall that we needed to go virtual. So if you go back 10 years ago, it was avatars, right? That was the way people were learning. You create these little avatars and they're kind of like pixelated, and they go to a breakout room and do this. And no one would pay any attention to the actual learning. So when I say we start experimenting, I mean, we grabbed clients and said, we'll do three programs. You just provide the people. Yeah. And so we were experimenting avatars, you know, obviously, because we're not using them anymore, right? Yeah. So that wasn't the way to go. That was a great learning experience, though. So my team and I continue to collaborate, and then cut to a few years in the future. Remember the big digital television, the Cisco systems, rather, telepresence. Yeah. So you have to go to leave your spot, go to a room, go telepresence with other people in a room, and you're looking at these TVs. And we actually taught really, really effectively in those environments. It did not replace on-site learning, though, because everybody had to leave to go to a central location to learn and then go back. So it was the same thing as on-site, really. Yeah. Now, cut to a few years later, technology starts catching up with us. We have Skype, we have FaceTime, and so we start teaching in those formats, and then the platforms really start coming to place. Adobe Connect, Zoom, WebEx, BlueJeans, all these different platforms.
Teams.
And so we start, Teams, right, exactly. Microsoft Teams, we just did one 2 days ago on Teams. We start grabbing our clients, blue chip clients, not who have digital teams already and they're not functioning really well, virtual teams rather, mm-hmm. who are taking people who are on site and moving them virtual with each other. And then the last is people have never met each other on site and who don't know each other virtually, and they're forming a brand new team. So we started experimenting in a number of different ways with them 3 years ago, and created a lot of different ways to communicate and collaborate with each other through this specific medium. And that's one of our major focuses right now. In the virtual world, communication, collaboration, creativity, creating culture, creating virtual leaders, by the way. There needs to be virtual leaders, which is very different than on-site leaders. Mm-hmm. My team has always been virtual. New York, Chicago, LA. No one's in my home office other than my home, my family. So it's a different style of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because as well, you got to think that most people are forced entrepreneurs now. So go back to, you know, our bases being entrepreneurs, that's your own schedule. You have different challenges around the house that a lot of people might not have had before. So that empathy part has to come in. And then we move into virtual presentations, virtual sales, virtual relationship building, all the stuff that we need out there also needs to take place here. And that's where we really focus a lot of our time and energy in the virtual world.
Yeah, wow. So it sounds like you were really well positioned for the pandemic that struck the United States.
You know, I would not want this ever. I would never, ever, ever want what's happening to be happening.
Yeah.
At the same time, as I mentioned, the writing was on the wall for an experiential company that you're never going to replace what happens in one room with everybody together. And at the same time, if that writing is correct and you need to look at other paths, then we did explore a lot of paths, and we are in that position right now to really effectively help virtual teams and leaders create virtual culture and deal with some of the challenges that we're all facing.
Yeah. And do you think, this is just your opinion, do you think that a lot of companies will continue to operate the way they are operating now with more people working from their homes instead of bringing them back when it's safe to do?
In my opinion, there's a high probability of that because of that last thing you just mentioned, if it is safe to do or when it is safe to do. Mm-hmm. So those two are unknown to us. We don't know when mm-hmm. or if this is going to, you know, round the corner, especially without some kind of cure or vaccine, mm-hmm. something to put us in position to be able to be in closer proximity with each other. Mm-hmm. So we need to look at this not only as a challenge, we need to look at this as an opportunity. An mm-hmm. opportunity to create teams, an opportunity to create culture, because everything that we do in business improv is people. It's people, yeah. it's relationship building. That's what mm-hmm. we focus on, yeah. that human element. Because also there's a lot of people right now who are, you know, it's a tricky space and morale is a bit of a challenge and resilience mm-hmm. is a bit of a challenge. Yeah. So we, you know, improv, that's improv. Be happy and bounce back. So that opportunity is there for us to work on developing each other and continuing these connections so that once we leave here, we are strong. Mm-hmm. That said, I believe that those who can are going to figure out how to thrive in this environment. And, you know, as a people, we will push through this. We yeah. will get through this. Yeah. And so part of that, though, is a learning and an evolution. How we get through this, what does that new environment look like? Because I don't think that new environment for a long time is going to be everybody's rushing to get back on buses or trains.
Yeah, subways.
To get back to a dense urban environment, subways, yeah. exactly. Yeah. So if we are then working here in the future, then we got to think about that type of development on a long-term play, because otherwise people are going to create habits that are bad.
Yeah.
Right? We're going right. to, and then we have to break those habits on an entrepreneurial level. I can't be there to even like hold you accountable. So when we close this, you're going to go do bad habits or we put some structure in place now.
Yeah.
The other part of that though, which is I believe to be a reality, is once we do thrive in this, there's going to be a lot of people who, if the bell gets rung and says, come back to the office, they're going to say, why?
Yeah.
Why? I don't yeah. like the commute. I yeah. do my job really well. Yeah. I like the convenience of being home. And yeah. there's going to be some employers who say you have to come back, and they're going to end up potentially losing some good talent because yeah. of that.
I agree with you totally. I think that was a trend already with the younger people saying, you know, can I work a few days a week from home or can I be remote all the time? Versus the older generation kind of used to the way they were doing it. And now that they're at home, they're like, hey, I like yeah. this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so how have you coped personally with this situation?
You know, I'm an on-site guy. I mean, that's what I'm brought in to do, especially with improv. There could be a performance aspect to that. So all of my performing has stopped, of course, mm-hmm. with every improviser that's out there, and all the on-site training has stopped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the part of what I think some of us thrive in is people connecting mm-hmm. with each other yeah. on any level, even if it's not, you know, you're always on, just like, you know, connecting with each other on that personal level. So mm-hmm. it's a bit of a challenge. I mean, the board back there used to be, you know, full of all sorts of things. And I'm writing notes to myself. I don't know if you can see this. Let's see if I can find it. This is stay focused.
Oh yeah.
Never stop trying. Stay positive.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's not only for me, and I'm a pretty energetic, positive guy. And even with this, it's a roller coaster ride, the mental mm-hmm. aspect of this.
Yeah.
I got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old who look at me, and I need to make sure that I'm maintaining, and I don't want to be too businessy about this yet, my brand, yes. you know, for them.
Yeah.
And right. my wife as well, you know, we need to come together, and this is a stressful time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that we all understand that it's okay to be stressed. It's okay to freak out sometimes, you know, that resilience part of this doesn't yeah. mean always go up. It just means bounce back.
Yeah. You know? Don't rest there too long.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you got to scream in the pillow or
yeah.
go for a walk in the backyard and air punch or whatever, yeah. punch the air. get it, release it, because if it, it doesn't come out, then it's eventually going to come out, right?
Yeah, right. In a way you don't want. Yeah. So tell us about your what you're shifting with your training.
Yes. So, well, everything we do is the Ride the Bike style program. So the virtual stuff is the same exact way. Whether it's a live stream or a webinar, I put people up on their feet. I get them moving around, experiential, and I teach you how to ride the business improv bike so that ultimately you can continue to use it. I pin it down to behavioral sciences. So even if it's something like a live stream, the interaction is more or less through the chat. The virtual classroom, though, like on Zoom, for example, you can put people in breakout rooms. So it's much similar to what I would do on site, where we'd start all together in one virtual classroom. We'd put the cognitive framing in place. Why are we doing this? You know, let's define the outcomes of this thing, very clearly define the outcomes so that it becomes almost binary. You succeed or you fail. You reach the outcomes or you don't. And we focus on reaching the outcomes.
Yeah.
We don't create that model and then be like, yeah.
Oh, you didn't do it? Okay.
No, we create the model so that you're like, yeah, they did it. It's not already they did it because we drive. And then once that's in place, put them in a group exercise, put them in breakout rooms. Group exercise, new breakout rooms with different people, new exercises, different challenges. Mix up, make it a very dynamic, energetic experience. And then, of course, wrap it up with accountability practices. You know, this is, if you're leaving this program with some tools and techniques, how are you going to use them? When are you going to use them? With whom are you going to use them? Why? How are you going to hold each other accountable? Because we will slip. So you have to create that zone. And that depends on, of course, how long you have the opportunity to work with people as well, whether it's a one-off or an ongoing type of coaching, executive coaching, training, entrepreneurial, you know, what, how do we all adapt together?
Yeah.
And that's the virtual one. The digital one, though, is pretty cool. The digital is an asynchronous learning program, off the shelf, online. It's 4 hours long. It's called Improvisational Communication. And it's about personal and professional development in communication, collaboration, creativity, and creating culture, whether it's on-site culture or virtual culture. It's got a change arm that's very strong and a conflict arm that's very strong. Because if you're going to change your culture, you're going to need to know about that as well as what happens when people are like, wait a minute, why are we doing this?
So
it's essentially the digital course for the book. They complement each other. So it's 4 hours long. It's about 8 modules with 10 videos in each module. So 80 videos. And it's professionally shot. I shot at Mashable in New York. And so the quality is all there. And then the content is, once again, based in this. I want you to use these tools and techniques. It's got, each video, by the way, is just about like 3-4 minutes long. So though it seems like a lot of videos.
Yeah,
it's not like, well, I'm going to lecture for an hour. Some are, you know, closer to 7 minutes, a couple like 2 or 3 because the exercises are long. Because once again, I'm teaching you these exercises, not only for you to do them this way, for you to bring back to your team and say, okay, this is why we're going to use this language and go through this exercise. And it has a bunch of worksheets attached to it that if you choose to go through these worksheets, by the time the whole program is done, you have a couple of sneaky summary worksheets. And you will walk out of improvisational communication with an action plan. This is how I will use these tools and techniques on my own authentic terms. So once again, it goes back to your question before, what about, you know, your uniqueness? Well, this is all about your personal professional development. So when you leave with your action plan, you have your takeaways and this is how you're going to implement them, the roadmap for continued sustainable success.
Yeah, wow. And so is that the one that's the open enrollment program or is that something different?
No, thank you very much. That's something different. So the virtual one is on-site, we're live, we're talking to each other through this medium. The digital one, improvisational communication, it's bite-sized, you do it as you go, very digestible at your own pace.
Yeah.
The open enrollment program, which is going to launch in July, June, July, 2020 is a combination of the two of them. So you get the foundational base of the improvisational communication online, play as you go, and then the virtual, where you come across me or one of my elite team, and we will act as your personal coaches. We'll put you in classrooms, so build community as well, so that in that spirit of mastermind, you have other great minds who are going through this, and you can share with each other. We could do it as a team. We could do this with strangers to build community.
Yeah.
So it's really the combination of the virtual and the digital. That's the open enrollment program that is going to be coming out soon.
Yeah, so that would be something for a solopreneur like me, right? If I want to learn these skills better and practice, have an opportunity to practice them.
Yes, and in that same spirit as mentioned before, expanding your network, finding other people of like minds that you can bounce problems off of, create that psychologically safe space that we're just sharing with each other and getting each other's back, especially today, now.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that sounds awesome. You'll have to keep us posted when that becomes available.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. Yes.
Bob, what can people do right now in this environment? Can you give us some tips that will help people?
Yeah, I'll go quickly with these because part of these I want to do is set up.
Okay.
So one is you have to look at the camera. Hopefully by the time everyone's hearing this, it's common language that we think we need to look at the face, and I'm looking at your face right here. However, that doesn't feel like eye contact, right? So you have to find the green dot, the red dot, this thing right there. You have to look at that. Second, watch your lighting. Watch your lighting, because if you're too hot, it's not going to look good. If you're backlit, no one can see you. And that's the one that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. They'll stand in front of windows. And so you're totally backlit. So you look like a villain of some kind.
Just put your witch's hat on and you're all set.
Right. So a couple of things like that, just aesthetically to fix your environment. Because most people don't mind this in the background. It's just those small things that make a difference. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would say is cling to yes and. Now, I want to break this down very quickly that yes is not agreement. Yes isn't I'm going to execute a bad idea. That's not what yes is. Yes is understanding. Yes is I hear you. Yes is I accept you're saying this to me from your voice. I accept that this is the reality for us. So yes is thoughtfulness more than anything. Okay. And is the bridge to your voice, and is the bridge to your background, your education, your drive, your passion, you and everybody else. So once again, if yes is thoughtfulness, you have my undivided attention, and it's the bridge to how you're thoughtful, how you're present, how you're in the moment. And using this simple two-word phrase, it can become a Swiss Army knife for you. You can use it for slowing the conversation down. You can use it for brainstorming or ideation. You can use it for connection and empathy. You can use this for conflict management. It really is a very powerful tool once you get comfortable with it. Because once you're comfortable with it, it will become authentic to you. And once it's authentic, it'll have its own little twists and turns and your style will come out. Yeah. So cling to yes and.
I love that. So to me, if I were going to say yes, I would say, yes, that's a great idea. Yes, that's a blah, blah, blah. I would add more than just plain old yes. Is it just plain old yes?
Once you have your style, it's whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. Because my yes could be, I gotcha. So if we do, and so the so becomes the and.
Okay, I got it.
So you should turn it into your own thing. However, you have to learn foundational work, right? You have to learn the fundamentals. Without good fundamentals, then the probability is you're not going to use it correctly, and you're not going to know how to get back to it either. So you cling to yes and over again until that which is uncomfortable becomes comfortable. And then once it's comfortable to you, the style changes. Because really what we're focusing on as well is the yes and philosophy, which is possibility and potential. Mm-hmm. And very often in times of risk and stress, we focus on what we can't do. We focus on parameters that kind of keep us like this, as opposed to saying in that divergent style of thinking, let's blow this up. Let's get away from this. Let's not focus on what we can do. What can we control? What can we do? How can we get out of this? And so it's focusing toward the positive.
Yeah. So we aren't little robots running around going yes and all the time. The the yes.
I'll also tell you something else. No is appropriate. I mentioned before I have a 6-year-old. If he wants to drink Lysol and grab some scissors and go running in the street, I'm not going to yes and that. There's not going to be any confusion. No. And where did you get the Lysol? Because we can't get the Lysol right now. It's a hard thing to get. So where did you get this?
Yes. So what's your vision for your company?
My vision for the company short term is persevere, mm-hmm. to be as honest as possible. That's mm-hmm. that's what we're focusing on day to day. You know, at the end of the week, anytime there's a win, count the wins. The mm-hmm. small wins count. They count, mm-hmm. they count, they count. At the end of the week, you know, do larger wins. I have not let anybody from my team go. We're going to go together up or down. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to keep their morale on point, trying to keep their focus on point. Because right now there's, of course, not a whole lot of movement in my industry. So it's mm-hmm. anytime there's any movement, yeah. even if it's just the smallest, it's got to feel like a wave. And we got to feel like we're moving forward, even if we're just moving laterally right now. Because laterally can be forward. If yeah. It's foundational work, right?
Yes, back exactly. And forth. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the short term. The long term is we were going to launch our virtual products this year, our virtual line this year anyway. It was going to be in August, and that became an immediate launch. And so we'll stay on point with that and stay on point with the digital content and the open enrollment. And then I'm getting booked for keynotes and classes in the fall, and I'm crossing my fingers and my toes that we'll be in a place together that we can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so is that your vision for the future, is to be doing more of that sort of way of getting new clients by speaking, or speaking itself as a way of generating revenue? You know, two different ways.
Yeah, no, that's true. It probably is not going to surprise you that once people see the business background that I have and the sort of the pedigree of improvisation, they're like, oh, that's going to be an interesting keynote speaker. Like, all right. So I've been doing keynotes forever. You know, that's part of my DNA at this point. Mm-hmm. I do look at it as like a type of show too. Like,
yeah.
All right. I'm solo entertaining 5,000 people. So let's do it.
And so, 550 people. I think on your website that Ken Blanchard wrote a reference, or, you know, a nice note about the presentation you did for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting one. Because the whole focus, this was through the Center for Heart-Led Leadership. It's a great, great school, essentially, in organization in Colorado. Okay. And so they tasked us with, I think it was 40 strangers who had never met before, and this was on site. I had to put them through a specific set of challenges in an incredibly brief period of time, very, very short period of time. And the challenge was, when they leave with us, they feel like they've known each other for a week already. Wow. And so I went in there with a couple of my team, and we did our job. We did exactly in that binary, you're gonna succeed or fail.
Yeah.
You know, eyes were on us, and unknown to us, he was, Ken Blanchard was the person who followed us. And he came in only for the closing discussion. He didn't see anything we did up to that point. And he leaned over to one of the bosses and said, how long has this group been together? And on his own, he said, it seems like they've known each other for months. And so afterwards, he came up and introduced himself to me and said, I've never seen anything like that before.
That's so
I said,
cool.
If you want to know, I'll talk you through it. And then just by coincidence, I met him a few months later at a big conference that we were just, again, just you know, crossing over each other. And so, yeah, he was very generous writing a little blurb for my book.
Yeah, that is nice. Great. So what do you do for fun with your family?
Ah, that's a good question. So the garden finally got kicked in this last weekend. So the garden will be part of it. I want to continue to teach them how to grow things from scratch and respect food and the earth. We play some baseball in the back. It's a very small team baseball.
Yeah, really. We have four players. Yeah, does your wife play?
No.
Oh, three players. You have three players.
Really three, with a three-year-old who's just more interested in just running and giggling. So, yeah, the normal daddy swings and cooking. They're both getting into cooking an awful lot, too. So going back to that respect for food and getting them into improv.
Are you?
A little, yeah. Well, I live in Montclair, New Jersey. We used to have Montclair Improv. And one of the things that we've been doing probably for the last half a year or so is family shows. Bring your kids. We'll get them up on stage. You can jump up on stage with them. We'll teach you how to use this as a family, just a way to connect with each other. And as soon as we started doing that, my boy was on board. And so if he's on board, my little girl follows, of course. And so we're still doing that at home. They're just more table games than performance games.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So give me an example, just to be able to wrap my head around this a little bit. What would be an example of a game that you would do with the kids on stage, or that you would do with an audience at a presentation?
Yes, depending on that. I'm assuming those are two different age brackets.
Yes.
There.
Yeah, right.
So I'll go with the family one first.
Yeah.
Because ultimately you can do this at the kitchen table. It's an easy one. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of your audience is like, I know this one. You could tell a story one word at a time. You and I could actually, yes, do this as an example. Right. Super easy. Another one is based off of a game called Conducted Stories. So you would tell the story, once upon a time, there was this little dog who, and then just kind of pause. And I would just jump in. I decided to start a business.
I've been doing that with my grandkids for years. I didn't know it was improv.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And now if you superimpose both of these, though, to the adult world, and even virtually, you have a couple of exercises that you could do that relate to focus and concentration and presence and engagement and listening. So, yeah, those are a couple of
the same sort of technique by starting a story and then the next person carries it on with the adults.
If you take that exact exercise and hopefully this helps some people, and you work on that with your team, you really are focusing on engaging each other and connecting with each other and listening to each other and building off of each other and complimenting each other. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can superimpose that. I would throw that out there probably more as a warm-up than an actual big exercise, because on its own you're missing the foundation. So you're putting up architecture before you have foundation. You got to go backwards to get the foundational stuff in order for that then to work as a real exercise.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can still use it. Definitely. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, good. So that's what you do for family with, or for fun with your family. So the one thing I ask everybody that comes on the Sort of Success podcast with me is three traits that when you see those traits in people, you know, they're going to sort of success.
Tenacity.
Okay.
I'm gonna start with that one, because I think you can offshoot to hard work. It's drive, it's diligence. So tenacity.
Okay.
I'm gonna focus on that one. Second, energy. I think if you have, you probably need it if you're gonna be tenacious.
Yeah.
So that little pop of energy, I think is that the engine that keeps the car going through tenacity. Empathy. That one, I think, is an imperative right now, that you really focus on caring for other people, because most of us need people to come with us to, you know, we need to bring the team with us. Yeah. So that'll be my third. Empathy.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. So should people get in touch with you? What's the best way?
You can find, you can go to businessimprov.com. It's a really complicated name. businessimprov.com. You can definitely find me or Business Improv on LinkedIn as well. Bob Culhan on LinkedIn. Those are probably the two best ways, because through the website, of course, you got the phone numbers, you have the emails.
All the programs.
Yeah.
Okay. And the book on Amazon. Okay. Cool. Good. So thank you so much for being on the Sort of Success podcast with me. It was really fun to talk to you.
It was great talking with you too. And to you and everyone out there, please stay safe.
Yes, you too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Soar to Success podcast. For more insights into growing your business or improving your quality of life, visit soartosuccessmagazine.com and subscribe to the Soar to Success podcast on iTunes.